This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
It's not a hologram. It's not one of those green screens. He's sitting literally right there.
Until Monday.
Till Monday?
Monday.
Then what?
Where are you going? I'll be back in Carsville Monday for a day.
Oh, for crying out.
For a day. They're going to be, hey, look.
We got Falcons football.
Yeah. Going to be in Pittsburgh. We're going to be in Pittsburgh. Going to be in Tallahassee. Going to be in Carsville occasionally. I'm moving around in the fall.
Is it something I said? Did Fuller do something to you while I wasn't looking? Huh, big man?
No, he's good.
All right.
Everything's good. So it's just the way the schedule's falling right now.
It's your schedule, right?
I prefer to think of it as our schedule.
Well, I mean, so you're not going to be here Monday.
Monday I'll be in Carsville.
Yeah, I heard you. You won't be here.
No, not here Monday, but Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday here.
Okay. So we're only going to miss you one day now, the next week and a half.
Here, no, maybe a couple of Mondays. Then some Fridays. We'll be on the road. We got football games.
Well, the only road I know about is Thursday, September 2nd.
I know.
Me, Tuffy, we're rolling up there. Check you out in Raleigh.
Going to be good. We'll be with you in Raleigh. Be there. Then Pittsburgh the next day. I'll be with you from Pittsburgh.
Okay.
We're getting out on the road, man.
Well, you're getting out on the road.
Well, we got to get you on the road at some point.
I get one day a year.
September 2nd.
According to the ACC Network schedule, I get one day out of the basement a year. It'll be Thursday, September 2nd.
I bet we go to Uptown Charlotte at some point talk basketball.
Well, that really doesn't count.
That doesn't count as a road?
It's 3 miles from here.
Okay, well. Drew Brooks, our producer, just noted this. You were invited to the ACC kickoff, which also was in Uptown Charlotte.
I would have been more than happy to be there. I just didn't want to give everyone COVID. How about that? My gift from me to you. I'm going to stay as far away as possible. Even Mrs. P just locked the door. She'd crack the door and go, are you okay?
Right.
No. You lock.
There you go.
We'll see you in 2 weeks.
See you in 2 weeks.
It's kind of how it works.
Yeah. Coming up on the show today, Andy Staples will be here at 7:30.
Excellent.
Multimedia journalist.
Athletic.
Athletic.
No, I'm not saying he's athletic. He works for
the
Athletic.
He works for the Athletic. That's right.
Sorry.
And in case you missed it, with Louisville defensive coordinator Brian Brown, Sean Bedford will be here, Georgia Tech football radio analyst. Today's road trip is in Midtown Atlanta. Roddy Jones and Chris Cotter have survived the remnants of Hurricane Fred, Tropical Storm Fred, the rain that got dumped on Metro Atlanta yesterday. Those fellows will be at Midtown tonight for the road trip with Jeff Collins and the Jackets. And Chris Felica makes his triumphant return to the Packer and Durham program. And we will ask about Miami. Yes, we're going to ask Felica about Miami.
I'm excited, by the way, of the series coming up, taking you inside, behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Of the U. That's bet. Coming up Monday, right?
Yeah, Monday night. Looking forward excellent. To that. So all that, plus top 100 list. And before we're done today, we had some fun yesterday with the old ACC Pac-12 stuff.
Oh, boy.
Let me tell you that back in the 60s, ACC teams used to go to the West Coast, and it wasn't fly out there on a Friday and come back after the game. They would fly out there, and they'd visit places and do things. And every once in a while, Hollywood stars would – make their way to ACC campuses for pictures and such. We've got some of those pictures.
You better believe we do.
Yeah.
I'll let you guess who involves.
And we've got a moment at Georgia Tech at Rose Bowl Field, the old practice field at Georgia Tech. We got a moment that time stood still at Rose Bowl Field from the late 60s.
One word to describe that photo. Smoking.
Yeah, it is. Yep.
Check it out. 8:45.
Those of you that are at a certain demographic in this world, you're going to know exactly what we mean. Those of you that are younger, we're going to have to explain.
Well, some of you that have a pulse will totally understand.
There you go.
That's how I describe that.
Yeah, that's good. Nice.
But I'll tell you one thing. At 8:45, Durham, Packer, you're going to see some photos that not a lot of people have ever seen before. You better enjoy it. Before Tim Beret takes him away and puts him back in the vault for another 50 years.
That's exactly right, 50 years. All right, let's start the show with, we've had a lot of conversation about name, image, and likeness.
Yep.
I mean, we've got quarterbacks with restaurants. We've got linemen eating free with barbecue and all sorts of other things.
Soft drinks.
Soft drinks. Yeah, we got that going too. But you know what else we have? We have people doing things.
Giving back.
That are in charitable thought and concept that are making an impact.
Yep.
And not that the other stuff is not unique and a story for, you know, most of college football, but there's one or two that are happening that you need to know about. And I'm not sure they're going to get the steam pack that the others do, but this one does.
Yeah,
and it's Brock Hoffman at Virginia Tech.
Yeah, it's outstanding. And you know, you kind of remember your roots, right? And mm-hmm. this is a perfect example of what we're talking about. Brock is hooked up with Bob Huff Chevrolet and Huff Ford.
You betcha.
And have come up with this cool deal. This is smart. Now, see, this is, to me, name, image, and likeness working, I think, in what the intention of the rule was.
Yep.
All right. Again, I'm not knocking anybody that doesn't do this, but Brock's got a great idea here. So he announced that he's partnered with, again, Bob Huff Chevrolet and Huff Ford to provide a 325 book bags filled with school supplies for kids in his hometown of Statesville, North Carolina, et cetera, Virginia. And this is what we're talking about, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, name, image, and likeness. His name's all over it, but he's given back to the community. So double thumbs up to Brock Hoffman and the sponsors that said, hey, listen, this makes sense.
Yeah.
Let's do it. I love everything about this.
Yeah. Bob Huff, Chevrolet, Buick, GMC, buy with confidence. And you know what? There you go.
Hey, anybody that sponsors a student athlete,
yep,
and they have a concept of, all right, it's one thing to say, hey, listen, here's a check for X, but how are we going to do this? I mean, how are we going to get a bang for our buck here in terms of doing the right thing? The best way to do it is give back.
Mm-hmm.
Just give back. And so Brock Hoffman, again, man, that's a strong move. Love everything about that move.
Yeah,
that is name, image, and likeness like I think it was intended to. And again, I'm not knocking anybody who's put a piece of a check in their back pocket. I like doing it myself, so I'm not knocking it. But that is the way you do it.
Yeah.
I think that's a cool deal.
And look, they're all fine, and it's the time to do it, right?
No doubt.
But, you know, you've got now a path to do stuff like this. But here's where I'll go with this. When you get something like this and 350 young people are, you know, going to benefit from Brock Hoffman's generosity and that of Bob Huff and his dealerships, that's what you do, especially in Wythe County, Virginia, and Statesville and places like that. And there you go. That's good. That's good, good, right?
Yeah. There is no downside to that whatsoever. That is what you call a win-win proposition.
All right. Now, here's another side of NIL. And I'm not necessarily sure what all this is, but it is newsworthy and noteworthy. SI.com yesterday has a story of Florida State players being offered a deal from a crypto company.
Yummy. Yummy crypto.
Okay, now, you going to talk me through this?
No.
A four-month-old cryptocurrency company is offering $500 to all eligible Florida State football players in the latest team-wide endorsement arrangement. The deal was inspired by Miami's football team annual venture. Yummy Crypto is offering the deal for 1 month. The company stands to pay out $60,000 if all Florida State players agree to the deal, said Corey Johnson, the director of partnerships at Yummy Crypto.
I'm not into cryptocurrency personally.
Right.
I'm not. So this is a different universe for me.
Yeah.
But like I said, I am pro NIL. I think it's great when student athletes, if they have the time and are willing to put in the time up and above their studies and their school and whatever, what sport they're playing. Hey, if you can figure out a way to put a few dollars in your back pocket and it's a win-win, go for it. You got to go for it. So I don't know anything about Yummy cryptocurrency, but if they're going to come off the hip for $60K and everybody at Florida State football can get a piece of change on the side, man, go for it. Well, it's not going to affect anything. You know what? You know what you've got September 5th? Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Yummy. Yummy Notre Dame comes rolling in there, right?
They are halfway there. 60 of the 120 have taken advantage of the deal.
Awesome.
Now, remember, the deal started in Miami as well. Miami's football team and basketball team was offered $500 a month. Now, all you have to do is a social media endorsement for Yummy Crypto. So far, 8 players have opted into that deal with the basketball team.
Great. Again, I don't – people have panicked on name, image, and likeness. It's going to ruin college sports. You know what? I got to tell you, after a month and a half, Wes, I don't think it's done anything other than, hey, we're ready to watch football. period.
Right. And the question I think that's going to come up with this, and you've got a lot of people who you've been on the afternoon with you about stuff like this, mm-hmm. is once the season starts, what's the regularity that stuff like this occurs? Are there going to be players that step forward during the course of the season? You can get certainly deals done in the offseason, and we've had, what, by the time we kick, it'll be about 60 days of window for people to create things. So once the season starts, what's that going to be like? Now, there are other deals that are actually pending on the year, like exclusive, you know, one-on-ones with media types that are paying kids to do, you know, blogs or whatever the case may be. That's a different deal. But these social media, restaurant ventures, you know, those type things, are that going to change once the season starts?
It's all about production. You know, you could give me the, hey, DJ Uyunglele signed for X for Dr. Pepper. You know, you could tell me that Bryce Young's got seven figures in his back pocket before he shows up in Alabama. That's all fine and good. It's awesome. Good for everybody. But here's how this works. You know, if you're one of those guys, you got to play and you got to produce.
That's right.
And you know what? If you do, the money will follow you. If you don't, guess what's going to happen? You're going to be like me. You're going to be wearing a baseball hat watching everybody else play. And you know what? I don't care if you got a Dr. Pepper deal or, you know, whatever restaurant chain has jumped on your bandwagon or whatever the case may be. Hey, you got to go to class. You got to get your degree. You got to go play. You got to put in the work. And it takes up a ton of time. And if you've got some free time on the side to make some coin, man, go for it. But you still have to produce in the classroom, on the court, on the field, et cetera, et cetera. Just the way it works.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
While you're here, before you decide to leave and go back to Cartersville and work on that back deck for you and Clifford.
Clifford is very happy. Expanded property line. He's doing well. All right, here is the SI.com or ESPN.com. Bill Conley got involved in this thing. He appeared on your show.
I just had him on the show this week.
And he apologized early for Frank Beamer, right?
He did, because, again, this is one of those lists that only gets people mad. Right.
Right.
Nobody's ever happy when you come up with a list like this, but it's intriguing. But unfortunately, the good folks here at ESPN.com, Bill and the boys, left out Frank Beamer, who was ranked 27th. And as he told me, it took about 2 seconds on Twitter before Hokie Nation reminded him, excuse me, did you not leave out some guy by the name of Beamer?
That's it.
And he realized it immediately.
Yeah.
And he apologized.
We're going to take you through, obviously, 100 down, and we told you who was in the top 25 the other day. Bobby Bowden's at 3, Dabo Swinney's at 10.
7.
Or Dabo Swinney's at 7.
Right.
So you kind of get an idea what the top is, but the back end of it gets pretty interesting. Bronco Mendenhall comes in at 100.
Can we not get Bronco in double digits? I mean, do you want to be the dude at triple digits on this list? Now, you want to be on the list, number one. But could we not have gotten Bronco at 99? Kind of a little flip-flop.
Well, maybe Frank Beamer got put back on the list and Bronco went to 100.
Apparently.
That wouldn't go well with Cavalier fans.
No,
now, would it?
At all.
He is 30-32 in 5 years at Virginia. But, you know, look, 11 years at BYU, and I got to tell you, I think this guy's done a tremendous job. Rocky Long, disciple, played for him at New Mexico. This guy gets it now. And he is a program builder.
I remember after his first year when he spoke, he said somebody had asked him a question about talent. And he was completely transparent. Said, you know, we got about 27 guys on scholarship that can really play at the level. And people went after him.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, hey, wait a minute. If you ask a question and a guy gives you an honest answer, you can't complain. I mean, what do you think he was going to say? Hey, we got the 85 best players in college football. I respected when he said that because he was, hey, you want to know where we are? Here's where I think we are. I'm the head coach. We need to find 85 dudes that can flat out play. Right now we're at about 27.
Right.
I think that was the number he said.
Yep.
Maybe he's 23. But the point was we got work to do. And they have put in the work. They've made an ACC championship game. And one other thing, you know, given his BYU relationship in Virginia, one of the most interesting non-conference games of the year will be Virginia-BYU this year. I know we talked to him about it, and he said, hey, I'm going to say this for the last time, then I'm not going to talk about it until game week. But that's a game later in the season. Just keep an eye on that. That game will be emotional and be fun.
96 is Bobby Ross, who won a national championship at Georgia Tech. did an incredible job at the University of Maryland in the ACC. Later coached three seasons toward the end of his career at the United States Military Academy at West Point. The job he did at Maryland and the job he did at Georgia Tech
tremendous
are worth this list alone. And then you think that he took the Chargers to a Super Bowl in his pro career and that kind of
thing. I got
to
be honest with you. You know, I told you the other day, Bobby Ross, one of my all-time favorite coaches, and his Maryland teams. The ACC in the 80s, Dick Crum at North Carolina.
Right.
Very, very, very happy to be here. Youngster people at Clemson, Danny Ford.
Yeah.
And Bobby Ross at Maryland. Mm-hmm. Those three were beasts. Now, those three teams, you did not want to play any of them. But I was a big Bobby Ross fan. Of course, the national championship, Georgia Tech was the absolute cherry on top of the cake.
Which reminds me, we promoted this a little bit during the ACC kickoff. There's a new doc coming out this fall here on ACC Network about the 1990 ACC football season.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Like it.
Be on the lookout for that. Also on this list, Larry Coker, who, in my opinion, had one of the more tougher jobs. He had to follow Butch Davis at Miami. Now, 60-15 in 6 years, but did he win the game you needed him to win, Pac?
I would not, in my opinion, this is my opinion, I would not have put Larry Coker above Bobby Ross. I mean, Larry Coker, I mean, Butch Davis acquired a ton of talent, and Larry Coker was able, to his advantage, take advantage of that. He had great players.
But?
I'm not knocking him. He won a national championship. He gets credit for it, even though felt like those were Butch's guys. But they were all played for the U. That's all that mattered.
Right.
I still go back to that crazy Miami game with Ohio State, which was one of the all-timers.
Right.
But nevertheless, he's on the list. I thought, in my opinion, I would have put Bobby Ross
higher than Larry Coker.
I would have, but okay. It's not my list.
No, and the interesting part about this is when you look at some of these lists, you got to remember the landscape. I mean, he followed Butch Davis, which was a hard job. It didn't end well. Rarely does, by the way. But when you look at Larry Coker, did he do what you needed him to do to keep Miami going? Some would say the decline started on the back end of that. Some would say.
Well, I would tell you that Butch Davis had it going in the right direction in terms of talent.
Right.
And I don't think the talent level increased while Larry was there.
Wasn't sustained.
In my opinion. Okay. It kind of reminded me of the Danny Ford to Ken Hatfield
era. I understand.
That
right.
Danny had this thing doing this. He's gone. Hatfield had some really good teams.
And then
but from a talent standpoint, it was doing this before you saw wins and losses.
80 on the list, Syracuse's Dick McPherson, who is a great interview in his day, God bless him. He was a phenomenal, phenomenal football coach who ruled the Northeast.
Yes, he did.
First at UMass and then at the Cuse.
I worked with him in my first job out of college at TEN Sports because we had the rights to Syracuse, amongst others, and we'd go
God
up
love
there.
You. God love you.
He was fantastic to work with. I mean, just a tremendous person and obviously a big-time coach. And Syracuse had some great teams now. I'm just telling you. They had some teams that put a hurting on you.
When the Cuse joined the ACC, I spent some time up there doing ball games that first year, and he was still doing radio with our friend Matt Park and always hit you with, God love you.
Yeah, he was tremendous to deal. I mean, he was just a great
Sean McDonough's got great Mac stories.
Oh, you know it. Yeah. McDonough's awesome.
Yeah. Also on the list, Bobby Petrino, who coached at Louisville twice and had some success with the Cards, had him in the top five, obviously, in his first stint at Louisville. Butch Davis is 75 on this list. Coached at Miami and at North Carolina and obviously currently at Florida International.
Surprised with that number? 75 for Butch?
Thought it'd be higher.
I'm asking you. What did you think that one? What did you think? If we would have done this before ever seeing the list, if I said to you, Butch Davis, in, out, and if he's in, where do you think he'll be?
Probably somewhere in here. I mean, last 50 years, maybe a little higher. I mean, that record at Miami is stout now. And he had some teams. That crowd from 95 to 2000 was pretty good.
Well, it got better.
Yeah.
And you knew it was getting ready to be great. That's
he had
the
Nate
thing.
Webster and Dan Morgan. And I mean, he went through a little bit of a quarterback carousel down there, too.
You would put, and I'm asking you now, you would put Butch Davis's resume above Bobby Ross? I would not.
Yeah, but he won a national title, won a prominent national championship. You know, Look,
I'm just asking.
It came with strings, but Carolina was playing well when it ended.
It ended.
Yeah, it ended. So I think this list is hard to do.
Is it? When I had Bill Connelly on the radio show,
yeah,
I said, Bill, when you decided, hey, look, here's an idea, I mean, you just had to know that you were going to do nothing but ruffle feathers.
Absolutely.
And he said, oh, yeah, we know that. But, you know, and then the standards by which they tried to break ties and all that stuff. This is an impossible. It's a fun list to go through as a
fan.
It's an impossible list.
It's the worst thing to do.
It's hard to do.
Yeah, it's like naming the five best basketball players by position at your favorite school.
Well, here's the thing. I think that you could rattle off your top five and be in the neighborhood. And then as you continue, it becomes pulling teeth.
Well, okay. So you give me a starting five, then you got to put five more on there. That's where the fist fight starts.
No doubt.
Okay. So Butch Davis, 75. Jerry Claiborne at Maryland and Virginia Tech, underrated. Brought strength programs to college football. Brought weightlifting to the ACC. Nobody lifted weights until Jerry Claiborne got to Maryland.
Yeah. Randy White.
Oh, the Manster? How good was that guy in college?
Jerry Claiborne was a game changer.
Absolutely.
Yeah, forget wins and losses. We're just talking about the way the game's played, especially away from the field.
They always say great running backs.
Yep.
Frank Wysocki.
And, you know, the old Maryland, I know they're no longer in the league, but they used to be. But they're old unis.
Yeah.
I used to love Maryland's old unis.
The white helmet with the gold M on the side.
With the black edging.
And we're not telling Mike Locksley what to do.
No, I mean, listen.
Damon Evans, the AD.
They got Under Armour
another
now.
Another league. They got a whole they shouldn't be hard to make.
They're trying to be Oregon of the East. I get it.
Yeah, okay.
But it wasn't as cool as your stuff in the 70s.
All right, last one in the bottom 50, if you will. Now, I thought this one would be higher. This is a guy I thought would be higher because he did unbelievable work at two places. George Welsh, who is best known, the indoor practice facility at Virginia, is named after the great coach of the Cavaliers in 19 years. But he also did a tremendous job at Navy prior to coming to Charlottesville, Tupac.
Brilliant coach. And what he inherited at Virginia was a mess.
Mm-hmm.
And he turned them around, had them to number one. I still remember that great Virginia-Georgia Tech game of 90 in Charlottesville with Jim Nance on the call.
That's right.
But when it got started at Virginia, it was a wreck. Now, and I still remember that because I was in school at Clemson. I think I've told this story before. And Virginia felt like they had finally turned it around and they were going to play Clemson. I think it was maybe the first game of the season or second game. And we road tripped up to Charlottesville.
How'd that go?
It was great.
Yeah.
All my idiot friends, we're loading it up. We're going to Charlottesville. And we got up there, a bunch of bow ties, blue blazers, and we come in here, baseball hat, blue jeans, and cold beer. And you can imagine how that mix worked. And all these Virginia fans were...
Ladies happy to see you, though, weren't they?
Oh, the ladies were real happy to see us, which was always the case when we went on the road. But we went up to Charlottesville, Wes, and Virginia fans were talking all this trash, and we were like, hey, we're Clemson. What are y'all talking trash for?
Right.
And they were talking this big game. We go to the ball game, and I remember before it started, the Virginia Pep Band came out.
Yeah.
And the PA guy goes, the Pep Band of University of Virginia. We would like to welcome our good buddies from Clemson University, yada, yada, yada. And we would like to show your appreciation for being here by showing the greatest product that ever came out of the great state of South Carolina. And the band on the field wrote I-85. And let me tell you something. All my good old boys in our section, which was wearing a lot of orange and purple, they did not appreciate that.
No.
The final score of that game was 55-0. All right. And on our way back to Clemson the next day, every speed limit sign in the Commonwealth had speed limit 55, and somebody would spray paint UVA nothing. All the way out driving back to South Carolina. And I mean, I'm telling you, we had a blast. But going back to George Welsh, when you realized what he inherited and what he turned Virginia football into, brilliant, brilliant football coach.
There you go.
Brilliant.
That's right. Yeah. Nothing like a little defacing of state property.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
We'll continue the list from Bill Conley at ESPN.com. But we're going to switch gears on you a little bit.
Speaking of another list.
That's right. And this was an interesting one, given the fact all the conversation about the alliance and what kind of impact it can have. Andy Staples wrote a great piece in The Athletic, as he normally does, regarding the number of people watching college football on the ultimate tier. And he used the standard 4 million. We'll have Andy break it down. Mr. Staples joins us from The Athletic. Andy, good morning. How are you?
Doing good, guys. Good to see you back together with both pups in the room. That's the way it needs to be.
That's the way it's got to be. There's no doubt about that. All right, let's get to your story, because this was really interesting in this alliance conversation of the ACC, the Big Ten, the Pac-12. Obviously, scheduling's part of it. Eyeballs, people watching, networks writing big fat checks. It's all about people being interested in games of note. I thought your breakdown was spot on. The numbers are the numbers. No excuses. Explain how you came to this conclusion.
Well, I talked to a lot of people around the sport and just said, okay, what do people value? What do networks value? What do conferences value? And basically, it's those big audience, that premium audience, because this round of realignment is just a little bit different than the last one. The last one, everybody was trying to acquire territory because they were starting their cable channels, like this one that we're on right now. And you wanted to have as big a footprint as possible because people pay those monthly fees and they pay a little bit higher price within the footprint. So that was worth a lot of money. This time, it's just the big brands, big broadcasts. How many premium games can you get out of the lineup you have? And so I talked to some folks, and one person I trust who's been involved in a lot of these deals, I said, okay, what is a big audience now? Because obviously that's changed. Like the series finale of MASH gets 50 or 60 million viewers, but nothing gets that now. And so this person said 4 million. If you hit 4 million, you're doing really well. I said, okay, let's see what games hit 4 million. And I looked at the numbers from 2015 to 2019, because 2020 was a little bit skewed. The pandemic kind of pushed everything down. So I didn't really want to skew the numbers, and did the 5 years before. And it was very telling. I mean, it was about what you'd expect. Michigan, Ohio State is the most valuable game in the country every single year, if you look at it. Alabama, Auburn. But the Big Ten and the SEC kind of dominate in those games, especially in conference. The ACC had 13 conference games, but also had a bunch of games involving Notre Dame, and then games where its teams went and played SEC teams. So it was doing pretty well. The Big 12 had 12 conference games, but then if you take Texas and Oklahoma away, they only had two. And so that tells you why the remaining members of the Big 12 didn't just get snapped up once Texas and Oklahoma decided to go to the SEC. And then you get to the Pac-12, where there are only five conference games in that period that went over 4 million viewers. And the one that had the most was the 2016 USC-Washington game. It was the only game Washington lost during the regular season that year. It lost its time slot to the Michigan-Iowa game the same night. So that not only do they not have a bunch of games, they're among the lower ones on that list. So the Pac-12 needs quite a bit of help.
All right, Andy, now based on what you found out, and now let's kind of fast forward to the alliance happening. We obviously know the Big Ten is one of the war horses of the 4 million club. You've recorded that. The ACC has some conference games that have that kind of potential, obviously. The Pac-12 also has potential, maybe not as much as the ACC, but yet the ACC and the Pac-12 do share television markets, big television markets on the East and West Coast. But I'm beginning to start to realize that as important as that was to ADs 5-6 years ago, it's not as important anymore. The TV market of Boston, New York, Atlanta, Washington, all the East Coast, all the West Coast, not that big a deal, right?
It's matchups and who's going to watch. Because, yeah, the TV market in New York is important if you are starting a cable channel and you want to make sure that all of those people are paying you some money. But it's not as important in terms of games, because people in New York, for the most part, don't watch college football. You know, a high percentage of them don't. Like, a Yankees-Red Sox game is going to do a lot better number in New York City than a Clemson-USC game. So that's just how it works. That's just how people behave. But that doesn't mean people everywhere won't watch a USC-Clemson game. I mean, I think that's where these leagues could make some hay, is just make some fun matchups, because that's all we really want. All we want as viewers are fun matchups. And I know, you know, Dabo probably wants to play Wofford and work some kinks out. Mm-hmm. But we would much rather see them play Michigan. It's just how it is.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. If the 12-team playoff goes forward, and I think it will, because I think ultimately everybody will get over being mad at Greg Sankey and realize, oh, wait, this still works best for everybody involved. You're going to see schools want to schedule up, want to schedule right. harder, because those premium games sell tickets. Remember, the season ticket sales we didn't even talk about. That's not part of this. But it is part of this because, you know, back over in the SEC and in the ACC, the season tickets that used to sell themselves don't do that anymore because fans are like, I just don't want to see some of these games. And if you look at the TV ratings for those games, nobody wants to watch them either. So I think what you're going to see is teams playing 10, 11, 12 Power 5 on Power 5 games because you won't have to go undefeated to win the national title. And that means more good games for us. So if this alliance does anything, because I don't necessarily believe in this alliance as a voting block, because I know that the goals and needs of the ACC don't always align with the goals and needs of the Big Ten and the Pac-12. I can think of a pretty significant situation last year where the Big Ten and the Pac-12 were on the same page and the ACC was kind of aligned with the SEC and the Big 12. You know, do we play football or not? So I think the scheduling piece of it would be a bigger boon for every league, even the Big Ten, which is in great shape, doesn't need to do anything really, but they could add more of these and just keep pace with the SEC and keep making more money than everybody else.
Andy, I want to go back to the college football playoff expansion because I think you're spot on with what you just said. And you know, the other thing too is we've seen over the last 6 months to a year, big time schools announcing big time matchups. And it's not, hey, we're going to play in Atlanta. We're not going to play in Arlington. We're going to go play. You come to my house, I come to your house. And I think that was the first sign and flag that ADs of note at schools where they really important, where football is really important, kind of gave you a little thumbnail where the flags are flying that, hey, we're going to play these crazy non-conference games, but man, they are awesome. And I think that your point where, hey, you don't have to run the table. You know, when we get to this expansion, the college football playoff, we've yet to see a team so far lose two games and make the tournament. That's going to change. And you just get a sense from a scheduling standpoint that it's going to be okay if you lose one of those games. You know, hey, you can't sit there and go 9-3 and expect to possibly get in, whether this thing goes from 4-8 to 12, wherever it happens to go. But you just get the sense that the big boys are starting to round it up to say, guess what? We're going to just go start playing each other. And if you happen to be in the top 12 or top 8 or whatever it happens to turn out, you'll be fine. But you're going to be at least allowed to lose a couple games and still feel that you can make the college football playoff.
We lost Andy.
Just like that.
Just like that. He froze. Bang, bang, bang. Just look like at that. There he goes down the kaleidoscope.
You know what I think happened?
What?
I think he's making biscuits. Because Andy is a foodie,
yeah,
like me.
Yeah.
And if all of a sudden there's something that smells real good,
yeah,
I have to get right back to you. Yeah. So I'd rather have the biscuit than talk to you guys about playoff expansion.
I think you hit the pause button.
I don't know. We'll get Andy back here.
Yeah.
Try to get him back here. Do you agree with that, though?
I do. I think here's what's happening. And you know I like that term, schedule methodology. You know, that whole
just
deal.
Just rolls right off the tongue when you professional broadcast.
Where you got to get everybody kind of on the same line, right? It was interesting. I was with our buddy Jeff Schwartz last night on Pac-12, doing a show on the Pac-12 on SiriusXM, and they had me on to talk about the alliance. And he asked an interesting question. Do you think at the end of this, everybody in the Power 5 as we know it plays the same number of conference games?
I don't know. I really don't care. I've told you this before.
I know that, but
I don't care how many games you play. I think each league has to figure out its own solution.
But
if the Big Ten plays 10, if they move it to 10,
sure,
doesn't mean the ACC, the SEC, or anybody else has to play 10. You got to do what's in your best interest.
But along those lines, if Andy's right and the television dollars look at and say, hey, if you're going to play 8 conference games, 1 FCS, G5 game, and then, you know, 2 other Power 5s, 3 other Power 5s, this is the dollars.
Yeah, but here's why I disagree. Because not every league is built the same. If you and I are two conferences, all right, and I've got 5, 6 teams ranked in the top 20, you have 1. you can sit there and say, we play eight conference games just like you. I go, yeah, well, guess what? The eight I'm playing, I've got five of them are against teams ranked in the top 15.
Right.
Everybody's different. So I think just putting a stamp on it going, hey, every conference needs to play the same. Well, every conference isn't the same.
That's correct.
Now, I would have no problem saying, hey, everybody needs to play 10, assuming that everybody has five teams ranked in the top 25.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when's that going to happen? The answer is never. You know, you're not – the leagues are different. The ACC is different from year to year.
No question.
So what makes you think all four or five Power Five leagues or however many we're going to have with the Big 12 – why do you think everybody needs to play the same?
I'm not sure I do. I'm just asking it from a business standpoint.
Because
television is going to play a major role, probably a far bigger role in all this than we. I mean, we know it's big. Could be even bigger because it's going to determine the ultimate check.
Well, it could be bigger for the ACC, in my opinion, if this alliance gets off the ground and all of a sudden you can dabble schedules where you can see Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, Southern Cal, Washington, Oregon, et cetera, et cetera, on a semi-regular basis.
I agree.
That enhances everybody's schedule.
No doubt.
I'm a season ticket holder at Boston College or Miami or anybody, Syracuse or anybody in between, and you tell me, hey, Oregon's coming to town on our schedule this year. SC, Penn State's coming. Man, I'm in. That sounds great.
And
new blood, let's do it.
And I do believe Andy hit a very interesting nerve here. I think we all have to understand that the dynamic of the schedule from a strength of schedule perspective could change.
It's critical.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, I think if I'm on that committee, hey, who did you play? Great. But more importantly, who'd you beat?
Right.
That's why conferences are different.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, and look, I went to an FCS school and I understand the dollars and cents from that perspective. But right now, those games have to be, those games might be in peril.
Yeah, I would totally agree.
Yeah.
And you know who knows it? They do.
They do, yeah, no question. Don't forget, the ACC Network football road trip tomorrow is in Winston-Salem, North Carolina.
Heading to Switzerland.
Lucerne.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Everybody's happy.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Wednesday version. We don't know what happened to Andy Staples. He just froze. And again,
kaleidoscope of technology.
I just think there's
it happens.
Fresh biscuits were ready. Andy's a foodie, man.
You want to go with that? Let's go.
Andy does great work on The Athletic, and he loves food, man. My kind of guy.
Andy knows spots too.
Yeah,
he got a list dives. Of them.
Yeah, I'm with him. Yeah. I like it.
Brian Brown was with us yesterday from Derby City. Cards getting ready to get it cranked up. Labor Day night against Ole Miss. One would think with Matt Corral and the Rebels slinging the rock like they will for Lane Kiffin that the defense will have to be on point.
I learned in this interview, stuff in your neck is really important, so pay attention to this interview.
We started with Coach Brown, though, who plays his alma mater on Labor Day night. What's been the biggest improvement so far he's seen from last year to this year with the defense?
I've seen a lot of growth so far, and you know, these guys are giving everything they have each and every day. They're putting in a lot of work this offseason. And we're seeing the fruits of their labor right now. And the guys are, you know, studying together, doing a lot of extra work after practice. But they put in a lot of work this offseason, and now we're really seeing the fruit of their labor for sure.
Brian, given how weird last year was, just to kind of be back in a team environment has got to be a step forward because you played a lot of those young guys last year in tough situations. So just to have some degree of normalcy is encouraging?
Oh, man, absolutely. I mean, I was telling Coach Sack the other day, the first day of practice, we had a lot of fans out there, over 100-plus fans, as well as scouts, you know, NFL scouts. Those guys can come to practice last year. So now it just feels like 2019 all over again, just normalcy. You know, football is just back to being normal. And playing a lot of those freshmen last year helped us a lot. And you're seeing that now that they've grown up a little bit. And they're making a lot of plays out there in practice this fall camp, and it's exciting to see. So now we got to, you know, put all those things together come that first game versus Ole Miss.
Coach, your guys made a lot of improvement last year. 7 points less, 70 yards less than the year before. But you know what? Getting the quarterback, right? Tackles for loss, the guys up front. I know that's one area you want to improve in 21.
Absolutely. We want to do a great job up front. We say we got to win in the trenches. And our D-line coach, Coach Ivy, has done a tremendous job with our defensive line. We got a great group of young kids that are here that are pushing those older guys for playing time. And so those guys up front are doing a really good job this, so far this fall camp of getting a lot of sacks, a lot of pressures on quarterback to be able to help disrupt some air throws so we can get the interceptions and the turnovers that we need to be able to be a plus one team this fall.
Brian, we hear a lot about C.J. Avery and Keytrell Clark, and rightly so. I think those guys that have a lot of thump to them. But there's also Abdullah, there's Diaby, they're playmakers back there that don't get maybe the brand name those two other guys get. We had Yassir last year two or three times. I was amazed at how many plays he made for you.
Let me tell you something, man. Yassir Abdullah is, number one, a great kid, a great human being. But he's a kid that's worked hard every single day. All this offseason, he got a little bit bigger, faster, and stronger, of course. He can come off the edge, does a great job in pass rush, and he can drop in coverage. But when he brings that thump, he brings it. And Coach Dennison's done a great job with him, as well as Nickel KK as an outside linebacker. Jack Fago is doing a great job as well for us so far in fall camp. But Yaya Diaby, that's going to be a household name. He's a great defensive end. It looks like a lot of the NFL defensive ends right now. And he gets out to the passer for sure. And we're going to see him playing behind the line of scrimmage a lot this fall.
Coach, I know last year you gave up some big plays. You want to cut back on that in 21. But you know what? You're opening up with Ole Miss. And I've seen enough for the Rebels. I know you've watched tape too. You're jumping on a pretty explosive team on Labor Day night.
Oh, man. Number one, playing against my alma mater. You know, that's where I went to school and played ball. But those guys, Lane Kiffin has done a tremendous job of calling plays. Him and Coach Levy have done a tremendous job of just making, having a lot of explosive plays and putting their guys in position to make plays. And a lot of times, it's down the field, right? So with Braylon Sanders and Ningo and Drummond, all those guys, plus you got Plumlee now playing receiver. Matt Corral has done a tremendous job this last season of being a lot more poised than he was his freshman year, and throwing the football down the field. And so it's going to be a challenge, and I think our guys up for it. And we look forward to going down there in, Atlanta and Mercedes-Benz and having a really good football game.
All right, Brian, here's the funny part about the game. And I say funny because, I'm not coaching in it. The idea of getting a game like that at the front end, and Mark and I had this conversation with Manny Diaz, and we could have the same one with Mike Norvell and Sat and everybody else. These big games at the front are great, but you can't, in what you're doing defensively, you can't win or lose, let that 60 determine the rest of the season, right?
Absolutely. You can't let one game ruin the rest of the season. It's a long season. That's one of 12. And so we want to try to be in midseason form as much as possible. We know we're going to have some mistakes early on that will be the first game. But we can't let that deter and determine, the rest of our season. That's a non-conference game. Our goal is to win ACC, but our goal, of course, is to win every single game that we step foot out there in between the white lines. But we will not let this first game to determine our season. Hopefully we can come out of there with a win. We want to come out with a great showing, and we want to do a great job of just keeping the ball in front of us and not giving up explosive plays. And if we can do that, I think it'd be a really good game for us, and we can move forward from there.
Coach, any freshmen jump out at you after the first week and a half of camping or not?
Oh, man, it's a lot of them, man. I think about, Ashton Gelati, who's a true freshman that came in as a defensive end for us. He came in early. He power cleans 405. He set a record. And, he's coming off the edge just as better as Yaya Diaby. He's doing a tremendous job as well. Victor Brown is coming along, another defensive end. You think about the young linebackers that we have. Dorian Jones is coming along. He is playing downhill. Jalen Alderman is another name of a true freshman linebacker that's playing a lot with the first group as well. So that goes to show you that he's a really smart kid that loves the game. I just love his passion. He got a little, what I say, he got a little stuff in his neck, you know, that I like about him, you know. And, you know, the guys in the back end, you think about a newcomer, you know, like, you know, Kendrick Duncan, another safety that we got, a transfer safety, is doing awesome for us. Q Cole, we got from Alcorn State as a transfer. He's separating himself apart from the rest of the crew. And the young puppies on the outside with Kanal Walker and, you know, Trey Franklin, Derek Edwards, you know, all those guys are doing really, really well for us. And I'm just glad we got a lot of competition going on, Wes and Mark. You know, it's great to see out there those guys making plays. It's a lot better than what it was a couple of years ago when we first got here.
I really like Brian Brown.
Did a nice job last year.
You got a lot of stuff in your neck.
Stuff in your neck is important. Yeah. And
there's another word sometimes that goes there, he likes to go stuff in
your neck. Yeah, that's okay. It works for us.
Yeah, perfectly.
We're doing satellite radio. You can say whatever you want. but, you know, listen, that first game is a real test. Louisville and Ole Miss, because the Rebs can get up and down the field. And I think Louisville will be able to do the same thing, because I don't think Ole Miss can tackle anybody either, based on what I've heard from Lane Kiffin so far. So
arena football on 100 yards?
I think Monday night in Atlanta is going to be, hey, grab your popcorn, get in your chair, because I think there's going to be a lot of points. I really do.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.